Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Tulsa Symphony Orchestra opens its new season with an interesting overall theme and an interesting program of French music. The theme relates color to music, and the first program is titled Blue, perhaps suited for a performance of Claude Debussy's evocative score La Mer, or The Sea. Also on the program is Maurice Ravel's suite from his ballet score Mother Goose and the César Franck Symphony in D minor. Leading the TSO in its first program of the season is James Paul, guest conductor, who is music director of the Oregon Festival of American Music and the Oregon Coast Music Festival. He was a longtime conductor of the Baton Rouge Symphony Orchestra, where he was named conductor emeritus in 1998. He's also been a principal guest conductor of the Grant Park Music Festival and the artistic director of the Suwannee Music Festival in Tennessee. He's also had a long career of guest conducting major orchestras throughout North America, Europe, and Asia. Tulsa Symphony Orchestra opens its season with a program titled Blue this Saturday night at 7:30 at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center's Chapman Music Hall. James Paul joins us to talk about the program. James Paul, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Delighted to be here.
Tulsa Symphony is kicking off a season based on color.
I noticed that in the brochure.
And this is blue, is your blue color, and it involves French music for the most part, even though, you know, César Franck was Belgian. I just want to ask you, do you see this connection between color and music?
All over the place.
Yeah.
And not just with French music.
French music does lend itself.
Yes, yeah. But I mean, you listen to the symphonies of Elgar or things like that, it's all full of color. There are even some people that like to assign colors to keys, you know. For instance, Sir Arthur Bliss, the great English composer, wrote a color symphony, and each movement is a different color. So, yeah, French music is colorful. And this program is a wonderful example of the Impressionists, although Debussy didn't like that term.
Yeah.
I don't think Ravel did either. They both have their own sound world, somewhat related. And then there's the world of César Franck, who has a kind of slightly Germanic edge to it at times. As you said, Belgian. The French, of course, claim him. And I want to also say that blue does not mean that you will leave the concert feeling blue.
Yeah, right.
You'll be, I think, very happy when you leave the concert. It's a beautiful program.
Well, let's talk about the three pieces you'll be performing. The Mother Goose Suite of Ravel. And this is just a wonderful piece.
It was originally a ballet.
It was originally a ballet.
And if you do the whole ballet, it's only about 10 minutes longer than
the suite.
The suite isn't that long itself. It's under about a 30-minute ballet or even less. Beautiful score. Really delicate instrumentation, beautifully used. Beautiful melodies, beautiful tunes. I think especially interesting to the listener is the way he uses percussion. For instance, I think it's the third movement, the Princess of the Pagodas. There's an oriental flavoring to it. And you have different kinds of cymbals and celestas and triangles and all kinds of different wonderful sounds going on, quite apart from what's going on in the rest of the orchestra.
Of course, Ravel's a master orchestrator.
He was indeed.
He had this incredible way of hearing an orchestra. And of course, one of the great joys with Ravel is listening to his piano works and then hearing them. And I think at one point Mother Goose became a piano piece or maybe a four hands.
It may have been transcribed for piano four hands, piano two hands. Why not?
But in that particular piece, just the way he uses his orchestration talent to illustrate various elements of the piece.
I'd say probably the most obvious and delightful way is in the movement where Beauty and the Beast are conversing. And, of course, the Beast is played by the contrabassoon, the deepest, you know. But it's not done with any kind of tongue-in-cheek or anything. It's absolutely sincere in Ravel's part, and it works beautifully. And then she is oftentimes represented by upper winds like the flute or the oboe, things like that. And you do hear the conversation between them. It's quite beautifully handled. It's just beautifully handled. And the last section, the Fairy Garden, is one of those wonderful, slow, but absolutely beautiful pieces of music that remain with you after it's been heard. Both sensuous and chaste at the same time. It's extraordinary.
And it's an interesting way to end a piece, too, because most of the time a suite you expect to end with a bang.
It ends loud.
Yeah,
it does end loud. But it's not like the end of William Tell Overture or something like that. Yeah, and it all builds up to it.
Well, let's hear a little music from that movement that you were talking about with the Beauty and the Beast.
It's shaped, fashioned as a waltz.
Yeah, and of course, Ravel wrote wonderful waltzes.
Yeah.
And well, let's hear the bit of this waltz from the Mother Goose Suite, which the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra will perform this Saturday night. That's music by Ravel from the Mother Goose Suite. My guest today is James Paul, guest conductor for the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra's opening program of the season. He is music director of the Oregon Festival of American Music and Oregon Coast Music Festival, conductor emeritus of the Baton Rouge Symphony Orchestra. And you have a connection to Tulsa many years ago with the Tulsa Philharmonic. And you have a relationship with some of the players because you've worked with them in summer festivals over the years.
Yeah.
What's it like when you see a player in one setting and then all of a sudden you're in a different setting? I assume that happens all the time.
It does happen a lot. And the older you get, the more it happens because the more players. It's lovely. It's lovely. When I was here before, I opened the season with the Franck D minor symphony. As I said to the orchestra last night, I guess you've invited me back to see if I can get it right this time. But I also served kind of as the artistic advisor. They were looking for a new music director, and I helped them set up the programs and things to look for in a conductor and helped them choose I think, six or eight candidates, whatever it was.
Now, this particular program is all of one, it's a pretty short period of time, and also geographically, it's pretty small region, Paris to
the capital of Belgium,
Brussels, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. You do get Debussy's feelings, I guess you could say, about the Mediterranean, although I don't know that he ever visited the Mediterranean.
In La Mer.
Yeah. That's the second work on the program.
What's it like to conduct La Mer? Because La Mer is just, it has this great flow to it. I mean, it is one of the most descriptive programmatic pieces around. I mean,
I have to say that Debussy's La Mer is, for me, I mean, there are a number of pieces, and I don't mean this as a limitation, but pieces like La Mer, Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, the two Elgar symphonies, they are absolutely always fresh. The Prokofiev Classical Symphony, I don't care how many times you do them or hear them, they are absolutely brand new each time. And La Mer is one of those pieces that almost reinvents itself as you play it. It's one of the great orchestral scores.
Reinventing itself as you play it. What do you mean by that?
It's never the same old, same old. It's like this wave was bigger this time than that time, or the undertow is extraordinary here. I mean, I'm being metaphorical, but it glistens, it shines, it's always fresh. It's just always fresh.
And it's funny you use those metaphors because that can really refer to the performance too as well.
Yeah.
It can evoke the sense of power of the orchestra. It also, the sense of sereneness of the orchestra. It really does test the orchestra in many different ways.
Yeah, it's truly a virtuoso orchestra piece. I mean, this, as old William Steinberg said to a younger conductor who will remain nameless after hearing this young conductor do Mahler's Fifth Symphony. I'm told by people who were backstage, Maestro Steinberg came up to him and said, "Sir, not for children." Well, La Mer is for top-flight players. It tests everybody, both as sections and as individual players. It's amazing.
And is it, I would assume it's a combination of technical and
very demanding technically, but it's, the technique must be at the service of color, of motion, of all the things that make music music. It's just you cannot separate one out from the other. I mean, really, actually, you can say the same thing about any piece of what we call classical music. But there are certain pieces that it is just, I mean, let's put it this way. I've heard very good amateur orchestras play, say, the early Beethoven symphonies, and they don't play every note perfectly, but they're wonderful performances. Beethoven does come through. If you have an orchestra trying to do La Mer and it really can't quite cut it, or there's a weak section or something, you can really notice it, and it does take away from the effect of the music. But fortunately, the Tulsa Orchestra is a terrific orchestra, and they will play it very, very well.
Now, when you come to a new orchestra that you've never seen before, and you have a program with La Mer on it, mm-hmm. where's your starting point? What do you do first to sort of test the mettle of the orchestra and to get a sense of what your challenges are going to be to get out of that ensemble?
Well, I could answer like Sir Thomas Beecham used to answer. He'd say things like, well, when I do a piece with an orchestra, I play this whole thing straight through, whole bloody thing. The orchestra makes a few mistakes. I play it through a second time. The orchestra makes no mistakes. I then pinpoint a few places. That's why I can do it with two rehearsals. It's all, you know, excuse me. I mean,
yeah.
I will say that La Mer is one of those pieces, one, many orchestra players will have played before.
Yes.
Two, even if they haven't, they know that it's difficult and will have worked on it. So you're most of the time apt to come to an orchestra that will already have some familiarity with the music. As far as testing the orchestra, I don't get up and try to test it. I listen to the way they're playing, see what they have an easy time with, and what may be giving them some difficulties. But it's not a question of testing them. Can you do this or prove to me that? I just don't like to make music that way. You'll learn if you keep your ears open. And if you're a proper conductor, and by that I mean if you know the music, you are listening to them, and you have a clear technique, this thing about putting the orchestra on edge or all that, it doesn't need to happen.
Yeah.
Then the music has a chance to be. My great teacher and all is a man I never met, but I have virtually every recording of his I could ever get. I've talked to musicians for years who played under him, adored him, was the great Dutch conductor, Eduard van Beinum. And his idea was that your job is to realize the score. And your handwriting will come through. And you make music as beautifully as you can, and you do this through leadership of and cooperation with the orchestra. I haven't always succeeded.
No, that's interesting because, you know, when we think of those early great conductors, we think of them as being tyrants and ruling through fear. But that sounds like he was a very cooperative.
With the Toscaninis and the Sells and the Reiners, and I thought that's what you were supposed to do. And there is an area in my temperament where if I really sense that somebody is just lazing off, that can make me a little angry, and I can raise my voice sometimes. And I don't like to do that, but people just kind of sloughing off. That gets my goat a bit. But I generally don't find that in most of the orchestras I get to work with.
Most of the time, a guest conductor, it's a fresh face, and you always want to do well.
And then, of course,
you want to do well because you're a musician.
Well, it was people like Van Beinum and Eugen Jochum, a great German conductor, Sir John Barbarolle, who, as I went on in this business, I began to realize you didn't have to be Mr. Tyrant. Haitink is this way, where you work with the orchestra. Doesn't mean you aren't demanding or you don't expect things, but they have to know you're on their side. They need to know that you understand what they're going through. You're not playing the notes. They are. So I love, one of my favorite conductors was the great British conductor Sir Malcolm Sargent, much underrated, I think. Truly a great conductor in much of the repertory, so great that he was the first conductor Toscanini invited to come conduct the NBC Symphony Orchestra after the war. He knew Sargent and seen him conduct, called him England's greatest conductor. At the end of the promenade concerts, which Sargent conducted, I think, almost 500 of them, each year it would be the conductor's speech, which was just a 5 minutes where he would speak to the audience, and there'd be jokes, and it was wonderful. But he always took the opportunity to thank the orchestra, and I have a whole recording of these set of these last night speeches, and on one of them, it's a line I've used myself on occasion. He says, now, I want to take this opportunity, my only chance, to thank the ladies and gentlemen of the BBC Symphony who have played so beautifully throughout the whole of the season, and without whom my conducting would look rather silly. And of course, the place goes up, you know. But when I've worked with young conductors, you know, who have stars in their eyes about how great it is to be of the conductor, and all that, just remember, If it weren't for the guys willing to strike the percussion and play the brass and the winds and move the strings around, you'd look pretty silly up there. Yeah. And as Charles Munch said when he came to the Boston Symphony for his first rehearsal as music director, without you, I am nothing.
My guess is
true.
It is true.
It's true.
And I'm nothing without a good guest. My guest today is James Ball, guest conductor for the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra. They open with a program titled Blue, features Ravel's Mother Goose Suite, Claude Debussy's La Mer, and the César Franck Symphony in D. Well, before we get to the Franck, let's hear a little music by Debussy's La Mer. Is there a part of this piece that you just
want to... Maybe the second movement.
Well, let's hear a little bit of music from Claude Debussy's La Mer here on Studio Tulsa. That's music by Debussy's La Mer, one of the pieces to be played by the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra, led by their guest conductor, James Ball, who's the music director of the Oregon Festival of American Music and the Oregon Coast Music Festival. You've had a great long relationship, besides conducting symphonies, and I think really...
All over the world, actually.
Yeah.
I've been very lucky that way.
But this is the time when you go from orchestra to orchestra, and it's summertime where you're really set. You've had music festivals, Grant Park, Suwannee, and then Oregon.
The Oregon... Coast Music Festival, which is a fantastic festival. I've been music director of now for 22 years. Mm-hmm. And I would say that is, I make sure that nothing, in fact, I've given up other dates to make sure that I'm there that week because it's a very special week. And we play in a hall that reminds me of the Musikverein where I've conducted in Vienna. I think the Concertgebouw, I haven't conducted in it, but it's just magic. Wherever you sit in the house, it's where the sound takes place. It's just magic.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a great experience.
But I have had some ongoing guest conducting relationships with orchestras over the years that I treasure. And the Chicago Symphony is one of my favorites. But I've gone often to Mexico now, to the Jalapa Symphony and the National Symphony of Mexico, and done some really nice things with them, too.
I was going to ask about the whole vibe that is around summer festivals. There's a very different vibe from a year, like a regular symphony orchestra. This is their job. And yet a summer festival is also a job, but it's also sort of somewhat of a vacation. And, it's a change of venue, and it's someplace new. There seems to be a different vibe. Is there a feeling from that you as a conductor as well?
Part of that is when audiences come to summer festivals, there's no sense, well, we should dress up or we should do this or we should be that. They go expecting to have a good time. I wish they would have the same feeling when they go to the concert hall. Mm-hmm. But there is something about a summer festival. People are generally more relaxed, I guess, and not rushing from dinner to this, to get to that, to go back to the office, whatever it might be. As far as the musicians are concerned, I think an awful lot depends upon the quality of leadership the music has, both on the podium and in the management, how the orchestras run. Mm-hmm. I think that I agree. And also, I mean, I love the Boston Symphony. It's one of the great orchestras in America that I've not had a chance to conduct. And I was the Bernstein conducting fellow at Tanglewood in 67. And I remember we were given these seats right down in the front row, so we could observe the guest conductors. But I remember thinking, here's this incredible orchestra, plays one program on Friday night, one program on Saturday night, and another program on Sunday afternoon. And it is a great orchestra, and they often gave great performances, but there were other times, And this would happen with any orchestra where you could tell they were just running out of steam. Music and music making was being treated like it was just a commodity. And that isn't the way it goes. It's amazing how our orchestras in America triumph over the adversity of not enough time over and over again. I remember one of the great times of my life was a few years ago. I was invited to conduct the Orchestra Concerts Colón in Paris, which has a long history, a big orchestra, a Mahler Resurrection Symphony in April. And of course, as you know, Paris in April is just unbearable. I mean, I thought I'd died and gone to heaven. I was there for 11 days. They gave me 6 3-hour rehearsals spread over 9 days. Honest to God, I thought I had died and
gone to paradise. You had.
We had lived with the music. We'd made love to it. We'd eaten to it. Well, never mind. You can get. I mean, and it wasn't that we got to the concert and everything's all prearranged. I mean, there's always that thing, but we knew the direction. We were heading in the same way. It was there, and it was magic right from the downbeat.
Of course, an American orchestra.
Slam, bam, thank you, ma'am.
Yeah, 3 rehearsals, maybe 4, maybe 2. You know, 3.
Listen, I have the greatest admiration for my colleagues in the Grant Park Festival Orchestra, who, generally speaking, have 2 rehearsals per program, and they do a fantastic job. I mean, this is one of the best orchestras in America. I remember every once in a while when we'd be doing a Bruckner Symphony or something like that, we would sometimes get 3. But most of the time, they do what they do on 2 rehearsals. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Just amazing.
My guest today is James Paul, guest conductor for the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra for their opening concert of the season. Final work is, you mentioned you last time you were here, this was the work you conducted, mm-hmm. the César Franck Symphony in D. And I might have asked you this that time, which is, you know, at one point I've read that César Franck was the most popular symphony in America in the 30s and 40s, somewhere around there. And it was played all the time.
Well, it was played a lot. I don't know that it was more popular than the Beethoven Fifth or the Schubert Unfinished, but it was right up there.
Yeah.
No question about it. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, what happened? Nobody plays Franck anymore.
I don't know. Music seems to go in and out of favor. There was a time when you had to fight to hear music by Sibelius.
Yeah.
Now it's played a lot.
I can see something that wasn't popular becoming popular, yeah. But something that was popular all of a sudden becoming sort of like
hard. I don't know how to answer that. When I was growing up, one of the pieces that you always heard on the radio and in concerts was the great symphonic poem by Liszt, Le Prelude. You don't hear it now.
Yeah, that's true. And it has a very similar motive. It is the same motive, too.
Yeah, rarely do you hear something like Francesca da Rimini of Tchaikovsky. Mm-hmm. But when I was growing up, that was one of the barn burners. Mm-hmm. You will still hear today Romeo and Juliet of Tchaikovsky. That's big. One of my favorite things is to do programs that have themes, like, for instance, a program that I did recently on the Romeo and Juliet theme opened with The Walk to the Paradise Garden by Delius from his opera, A Village of Romeo and Juliet, then the Tchaikovsky Romeo and Juliet, and then after intermission, we did 10 of the scenes from Prokofiev's Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
Those things last. But I don't know. It's funny. When I was growing up, another symphony that used to be played a lot was the charming Bizet Symphony in C major. You don't hear it anymore. Yep. Why? Another suite, not a famous name. The composer's name was Liugini, was his Egyptian suite, which Arthur Fiedler did all the time. Yep. You never hear that live. Yep. And as I mentioned to the gentleman who brought me over here today, just a few weeks ago, I conducted the Sibelius tone poem Oceanides, or Ocean Eyes, we would say. Mm-hmm. And the music director of the orchestra was there for the concert, went out to dinner afterwards, and he said to me, you know, I've never heard Oceanides live before. And I said to him, neither have I. I mean, some pieces, just wonderful pieces, just never get played. Finlandia?
Yeah, no.
Not Oceanides. It's strange, isn't it?
Interesting. And the Symphony in D sort of suffers from this, I guess. And it's an incredible piece of music.
It is an amazing piece.
It has this, the theme that you mentioned.
And recurs.
Le Prelude.
It's a cyclical.
Yeah, right.
And the same tune is used to open.
Which I always refer to as sort of the must it be. That's what one of my old professors referred to it. I think that's what he referred to it as. You know, it's sort of a fate motive.
There's a film out on the, you can find it on DVD. There's 2 sets of DVDs featuring some of the great conductors of the past. And one of them is the great French conductor Charles Munch, who, along with Paul Perret, two of my favorite conductors. And there is a sequence of Munch rehearsing a little bit of the Franck D minor with the Czech Philharmonic. And it's very interesting to see what he goes after right from the beginning, which is, it tells the basses and cellos, vibre plus, vibre, a lot of vibrato. He says, you know, he goes into the symphony is this and that, you know, you can tell he's approaching it really on an emotional color level. It's charming to see.
Is that the way you approach it?
Yeah. I mean, the emotions in the music, your job is to release it, to play it in such a way that what is there is heard and felt. I must say, I admire somebody like Stokowski very much. He was a great conductor. But his attitude was a little bit, oh, here's this piece of paper with black and white notes on. Let's see what I can do with it. That's not my feeling about it. My feeling is, the same as I mentioned earlier, my job is to realize the score. Now, you want to use your imagination, your everything. And your handwriting will come. You don't need to worry about whether it sounds like my La Mer or somebody else's La Mer. I'm just not interested in that at all. I also think the more you align yourself with what you find to be the composer's intentions, the greater the chances are that what was actually in the music, what is actually in the music, gets to manifest. And that's what moves the audience.
Yeah.
William Steinberg would disagree with me. He would say, no, the audience comes to see what you are doing with the Beethoven paper, whatever it is. And fine, that's okay. They'll make their decisions. At any rate, I just think there are some things you don't have to worry about. And one is, are people going to recognize this as my La Mer? I'm just not interested in that. I am interested in Debussy's La Mer, and I'm interested in playing it in such a way that what is there in the music has a chance to shine and reach those people who've paid money to come hear this. And not just because they paid money, but, you know, we have a contract between each other. That's the way it is.
And it's all about, you know, this music has existed for a long time because it's moved a lot of people. And the idea is we're all going to have this emotional moment together.
Absolutely true. And there's no question in my mind after all these years of conducting that the audience helps to make a concert what it is. There is something about a hall with an audience that's really paying attention, that's really listening, that's different than an audience that's kind of, you know, and both kinds exist. And you don't turn around and shake your finger at them and say, oh, come on, pay attention. But there are some audiences you can tell, I think it's partly the performer's responsibility. They should begin playing in a way that brings the audience in, that encourages them to listen.
I've always noticed it as sort of a sense of breathlessness.
Yep.
You know, you know, you hear coughs, but there's a different sound when, and it's kind of people are holding their breath or they're into it, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you'll have an audience this Saturday night. Hopefully they'll be participating fully.
I hope so. We invite them to.
James Paul, thanks very much for joining
us. Delighted to be here.
James Paul speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. He'll be guest conducting the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra in their opening program of the season titled Blue, Saturday night at 7:30 at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center's Chapman Music Hall. Visit mytticketoffice.com for ticket information or tulsasymphony.org. We're going to leave you with a little music by Cesar Franck here on Studio Tulsa. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.